I want to ask you a question. Have you ever acted foolishly? Now, let's be honest now. Because as I thought about that this week, I come to understand I'm not the only one in this room that's ever acted foolishly. Be honest. Have you ever acted foolishly? Man, 100 memories came to my mind when I was thinking about that this week. I remember one time foolishly telling my wife, "You get on my nerves." That was very foolish, let me tell you. Very, very foolish. I remember the time that someone in the choir during the eve of one of our Christmas musicals, we were having a rehearsal out here one night, somebody, probably Brian Luffman or somebody, said, "Pastor, I dare you to do the worm on the platform right now before choir rehearsal." And I did the worm on the platform before choir rehearsal. That was very foolish of me to do. We've all done some foolish things from time to time. All of us have had moments when we've said foolish things or acted out in foolish ways. That's the chapter theme of this 10th chapter. Foolishness, folly. In fact, there are at least 9 different uses of the word foolish. You'll see the word folly, the word fool, the word fools, the word foolish, the word foolishness. The whole chapter, chapter 10, is kind of centered around this theme of folly or foolishness. And what Solomon is doing is he's attempting to keep us far, far away from a life of folly. And he does so by challenging us to slow down and live a sensible life. By sensible, we mean to live a wise life, a prudent life. Not only that, he says you not only need to be sensible, but you need to be mature in your daily growth in order that we might avoid foolish behavior. That's the focal point. In this whole series of slowing down. Now he says, listen, slow down and learn what it means to live a sensible, wise, and prudent life. A mature life that avoids folly, that avoids foolishness. And what I want to do this morning is I want to take the title of the message, which is the natural divisions of the chapter, little sins here in the first part, foolish words right in the middle, and childish leaders or ways in the last part of the chapter. Take these natural divisions, and what I want to do is I want to give you 4 statements of application that I believe lead us to living more wisely and sensible and less foolish and immaturely. Little sins, foolish words, childish leaders. Let's look at the first one. The first one is little sins, and here's the statement in your notes. It takes far less to ruin something than it does to create something. It takes far less to ruin something than it does to create something. Now, it's quite interesting to me that Solomon uses 3 different animals to drive home the point of this entire chapter. At the beginning of the chapter, we see dead flies. In the middle, we see subtle serpents. At the end, we see little birds. But let's first address this first problem that he mentions as a problem with dead flies. Look at the verse number 1. Here's what he says. Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. Now he's illustrating something to us, and here's the picture of what he's illustrating. He says, take for instance that you have this expensive bottle of perfume or cologne, and it's been sitting by itself for a good while. One day you go and you grab that expensive bottle of perfume, and as you begin to open the lid and take it off, the doesn't smell quite like you remember it smelling. And so as you look and investigate a little bit further, you see floating around in the bottle of perfume is a dead fly. He's dead. He's floating. In fact, he's been there a while because he's starting to decay. It's not only a fly that's floating there. You see one little leg floating off over here and one little wing floating off over there. And then when you take a whiff of it, it doesn't smell like that stuff that you bought. As a matter of fact, you smell it and it stinks. And you realize that this fly who has died within the ointment has done what Solomon says in verse number one. It's ruined the entire fragrance. Until instead of having something that smells good, you now have something that's been ruined by this little dead fly. Here's the modern translation. Solomon says, dead flies cause the ointment to stink. Here's the modern translation. One little hair can ruin a good steak. That's the modern translation, all right? One little hair can ruin a good steak. We've all been there. I think most of us have. And you take a Friday night, we're going to go out, we're going to eat at this nice steakhouse, and you go and you're excited about it, and you eat through the salad, and then your meal comes, and this nice baked potato fully loaded, ready to dive into it, and then the steak, I mean, it's beautiful, it's oozing, it's a little pink and slightly bloody, which is a really good way to eat the steak, the best way to eat the steak, and then you're ready to dive in. You take that knife and you're cutting it into pieces, and you take one bite and two bites and three bites, and man, it's good and it's fantastic and it's awesome. About the fourth or fifth bite, you start chewing a little something that tastes different. It's getting in your teeth a little bit. It's not the bristle. It's not the fat. All of a sudden, you pull it out back there, and it's this long hair that's not the color of yours or your spouse's. And you soon realize what was the best steak I've had in a long time has turned out to be the worst meal that I've experienced, right? He's exactly what Solomon is saying. Just like a little fly that's died in the ointment causes that fragrance to stink, so it is with our character and our reputation. He's saying at the last part of verse number one, look, so doth, just like that dead fly, just like that hair in the steak, so doth a little folly, just a little folly, a little fly, a little hair, to him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. In other words, a tiny bit of foolishness can destroy a person's dignity and character. Just a tiny bit. Just a little folly. Just a little foolishness. Just like that little fly or that little hair, all it takes is just a little foolishness to ruin your reputation. To ruin what people think is wise and good. That's his point. It takes far less to ruin something than it does to create something. We're talking about the little sins. The little moments of folly that affect our reputation in a big way. By the way, this is a principle that's seen throughout all the scriptures. It's not just mentioned once by Solomon in the 10th chapter of Ecclesiastes. No, Paul brought it to light in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 6 when he said, know ye not that just a little leaven, just a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. Just a little bit. It was Solomon who said in Song of Solomon chapter 2 and verse 15 as he was talking about marriage. He said in chapter 2 verse 15, take us the foxes, the little foxes. The little foxes that spoil the vines. It's just a little leaven can ruin the whole bread. A little fox can get into the marriage and destroy the relationship. It doesn't have to be big animals, just little things here or there, little arguments here or there, little disagreements here, little foxes that destroy in a big way. James talked about it in relation to our tongues. In James chapter 3 and verse 5, he says, even so the tongue, it is a little member. It's just a little part of the body, but it boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. Little. So we're not talking about big sins. We're not talking about great decisions of rebellion. We're just talking about the little things that maybe nobody else notices, little things that are in the heart, little things that are in the mind, little things that you don't think is that big of a deal. He says it's these little things that can ruin something in a huge way. Little sins, little moments of folly Solomon says, can spark major consequences. I like what Charles Spurgeon said about it. He said, little sins lead to great ones. Little sins lead to great ones. And we don't think about that when we're just dabbling a little here and a little there. In fact, when we dabble a little here and a little there, we think, oh, it's no big deal. It's just a little folly. It's just a little sin. No big deal. It's just a little argument. It's just a little lie. It's just a little flirtation at the office. It's just a little resentment. It's just a little drink. It's just a little whatever. No big deal. It's not like I'm doing it all the time. It's not like I'm letting it destroy me. No, no, that's the problem. All these little sips, all these little statements, all these little things that you're doing, it's destroying you far more quicker than you even realize. It's a dead fly. It's a dead fly that's floating in the ointment of your soul. It's causing you to stink. Toward the aroma of God. It's messing you up. And here's the thing about folly, these little things, it has a far greater impact than we even realize or want to admit. That's where he begins to break this down, beginning in verse number 3. Notice these statements with me in your notes, and I put them there on the screen as well. Statement number 1, folly cannot be hid. Folly cannot be hid. Now, don't miss the point of what we're trying to say. Solomon is saying these little sins, these little acts of foolishness, it has a far greater impact than you realize. And one of them is you can't hide. You can't hide foolishness. You can't. Notice what he says in verse number 3. Yea, also when he that is a fool walketh by the way, his wisdom faileth him, and he saith to everyone that he is a fool. Now, he's not saying that literally here's what a fool will do. A fool's just going to walk on the street and say, hey, my name's Jonathan. I'm a fool. Just want you to know that. Hey, anybody looking for a fool? Because I'm a fool. I want you to know by testimony, I'm a fool. That's not what he's saying. He doesn't say you to walk around on the streets and tell everybody you're a fool. But no, when you allow little sins, little folly to come in your life, you'll not be able to hide that foolishness. People will be able to perceive and tell that you're making some foolish choices. You just look at it sometimes in our everyday life. Come to a Panthers game with me. Come to a Hornets game. Let's go to a NASCAR race. And people get in there and party up all day and drink for hours upon hours. And then when the game's over with it, notice how they're acting when the game's over. They're acting like a bunch of fools. Everybody else is walking decently, hand in hand, back to their cars, and they're jumping on cars and taking clothes off and doing cartwheels. I mean, you can't hide it. They've dabbled in a little bit of sin. It's caused them to be foolish, foolish, foolish. And that's what he's saying. When you start allowing little sin in your life, it builds up and it builds up, and you can't hide that kind of folly. You'll just walk down the street, and by how you carry yourself and the things you do and the things you say, people are going to say, that's a fool. That's a fool. Now notice the second statement, verse 4 and 5. Folly will dominate your temperament. Folly will dominate your temperament. Look at verse number 4. He says, if the spirit of the ruler rise up against thee. He's talking about a bad spirit. Take this leader, this ruler. Maybe he's your boss. Maybe he's your dad. Maybe he's your husband. This man who's in charge. This man who has authority. But if he's acting foolishly, one of the ways you're going to tell he's acting foolishly is by his temperament. His spirit. Instead of dealing with you graciously and kindly and lovingly, he's going to be rising up, rising up, rising up. He can't control his emotions. He can't control his temper. He can't control who he is. Why? Because he is allowing little dead flies to stink up his reputation. Foolishness. You get to verse 6, you see this third statement. Folly is a matter of the heart regardless of external changes. Folly is a matter of the heart regardless of external changes. Look at verse 6. Folly is set in great dignity. In other words, it comes from the heart. Folly comes from the heart. Verse 7, here's the key part. I have seen servants upon horses and princes walking as servants upon the earth. Here's what Solomon's saying. You know, there's a lot of people who are so foolish in their heart. Instead of dealing with the folly on the inside, the root problem, they try to change how they're perceived by others on the outside. He said, take the prince and the servant for a moment. The prince is supposed to be riding on the horse. The servant's supposed to be leading the way. And let's say the two of them switch places. Now it's the prince leading the servant who's now riding the horse. He said, listen, you can change places all you want. You can fix up the outside all you desire. But that's not going to deal with the real problem. And that is foolishness is in the heart. It's in the heart. It's a heart problem that needs to be dealt with. Foolishness. Look at the next statement. Statement number 4. Folly will come back to bite you, Solomon says. Foolishness will come back to bite you. Look at verse number 8. He that diggeth a pit shall fall into it. Now, the next series of statements are proverbial statements. As a matter of fact, they're statements we see Solomon mentions in the book of Proverbs. He's now repeating them in the 10th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. They're Proverbs. We see this. He that diggeth a pit shall fall in. Now the picture that Solomon is giving is that of a hunter. Let's say the hunter goes and he digs this big hole and he's wanting to catch his prey. And so he digs this big hole so deep enough for when they fall in, they can't get out. And let's cover it up with leaves and shrubs and that sort of thing. They won't see it. They'll think it's just a part of the path. And you know how it goes. You just walk by and all of a sudden, whoop, you slip in. You've caught it. You've dug a pit. You've caught your prey. But the principle of the proverb is to teach us justice. It's the principle of us reaping what we sow. And he said, some of you, by your folly, by your foolishness, you're digging a pit for somebody else. And he says, here's the thing about foolishness. While you're digging a pit for somebody else, you're going to be the one to fall in it. Because you reap what you sow. How many of you remember the Roadrunner cartoons when you were a kid? Those were some of my favorite, all right? I'm in that generation. Some of you are like, Roadrunner, what in the world is that? They were awesome, all right? They were awesome. A lot better than this Pokemon junk. I'm going to tell you that right now. Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, right? You know how the cartoon went. He could never catch the Roadrunner. The Wile E. Beep, beep. That's right, Brother Bobby. Beep, beep. Hey, Wile E. Coyote. He's always setting these traps, always rolling down these balls, always digging these holes, and he can never catch the Roadrunner. It was always him that fell into the pit. It was always him that got hit by the rolling ball coming down the hill. And that's what he's saying. Some of us are so foolish that we think the things that we're doing is going to get the people we don't like, but in the end, it's going to be us who are going to fall in. You're digging a pit for somebody else, but you're going to be the one that's going to mess up. You're going to be the one that's going to reap that which you're sowing. He talks about snakes in the next part of the verse, verse 8. Not only does he that diggeth a pit fall into it, but whoso breaketh a hedge, a serpent shall bite him. He's saying, listen, this is for some of you that don't pay close attention to your surroundings. Again, the language of this is in the Jewish Middle Eastern days, and so even the snakes that you say are harmless, which I disagree with you totally about, the snakes that you say are harmless, a little bit different over there in the Middle East. I mean, I have all kinds of different snakes. They're all harmful. And so he says, it's like this man that just sticks his hand in the hedges, in the bushes, and he's pruning and pulling apart, but he didn't look first or make sure there wasn't anything in there that could bite him. He said, some of us are so foolish that we dabble in things that don't concern us. And we get our involvement in areas that we weren't invited to be involved in. And we stick our nose in people's business that have no business being there. We stick our hands in the hedges and we're going to get bite, bit, whatever. It's going to happen. It's going to hurt. Whatever, bite or bit, it's going to hurt, all right? That's what he's saying. It's going to come back to bite you. Like the pit that you dug for somebody else, you're going to fall into it. Like the hand you're sticking in somebody else's business, the snake's going to bite you. Then he talks about building and construction without counting the cost. Look at the next verse, verse number 9. Whoso removeth stones shall be hurt. You get up there and start taking stones without realizing there's a proper way to do it. Those stones are going to collapse. They're going to hurt you. There's a right way to take the stones off of a wall. And the assumption here is the guy just jumps in and starts taking them apart from the bottom. No, you start taking them apart from the bottom, it's going to fall and crush you and kill you. That's why he says about the wood is the same. If you don't know how to build it, if you don't know how to deal with it, notice what he said. You are going to be endangered, verse number 9. He said the same is true when it comes to our foolishness. It always comes back to bite us. Verse 10, here's the next statement. Folly will mess up your mind. Foolishness will mess up your mind. Look at verse number 10. It's interesting here. If the iron be blunt and he do not whet or sharpen the edge, then he must put to more strength. But wisdom is profitable. All right. So here's a guy that's foolish. He goes to do a job. He's got an iron. The picture here is of an axe. He's going to chop down some wood, chop down some trees, whatever it is he's chopping down, but he's in a hurry. He's not being patient. He's not making sure everything is sharpened the right way and that the tools he has is going to work efficiently. He's working harder than he is smarter, is what he's saying here. And he says, if you take that dull axe without taking the time to sharpen it, you're going to swing and swing and swing, and you're barely going to scratch the surface. Then you're going to swing harder and harder and longer and longer. Had you just sharpened the axe, then you would have got the job done a whole lot quicker than you are with all this strength that you're engaging in. And the principle is, when you do things foolishly, it causes you not to think straight. It messes up your mind. My dad has this saying about us Blankenships, because we're not very intuitive when it comes to building things and putting things together. My best response when it comes to fixing something is call somebody. But occasionally I will try to do it. My dad used to always say this about us. He said, we do things nice because we do things twice. All right? The first time we did it wrong and we learned our lesson, but the second time we got it right because we didn't follow the instructions the first time, all right? That's the principle. So I said, some of you are not thinking straight because you're acting foolishly. These dead flies are floating around in your soul. These little sins are causing you to act out in foolish ways, and it's causing you not to use your mind. Little sin. And the summary of all of this is simply the statement of application. That it takes far less to ruin something than it does to create something. You can have 25 years of a loving, faithful, wonderful marriage. It can take one moment of lust to destroy that 25 years. You follow me? Little sins. Dead flies in the ointment. And the question that I have for you and I this morning is this: what dead flies are stinking up your ointment? What little sins are ruining your reputation? What foolish choices are destroying your character? Little sins. It takes far less to ruin something than it does to create something. Now let's go to foolish words, number 2. Here's the second statement of application. Not only does it take far less to ruin something than it does to create something, but number 2, here it is. Here's what Solomon is saying. Ready? Stop talking so much. That's what he's saying. Stop talking so much. Foolish words. The poet Robert Frost said, half the world is composed of people who have something to say and can't, while the other half have nothing to say, but they keep on saying it. I like to say it like this. There are some people that the more they talk, the less they say. They just talk too much. I mean, constantly. And the more they talk, the less they say. They speak foolishness. In fact, it's quite interesting that there's seldom a discussion in the wisdom books of Scripture, which is Proverbs, Song of Solomon, and Ecclesiastes. Seldom a discussion in those books about foolishness without some reference to our use of the tongue. In fact, it's almost second nature that when Solomon deals with the fool in the wisdom book, it's inevitable that he's going to point out that he uses his words in a foolish manner. And I think most of you would agree that if there is one place we can spot foolishness, it's in the way people talk. Foolish words. And Solomon says, be sensible, be wise, be prudent, be mature, grow up, and stop talking so much, Solomon says. Because all this jabber, all this talk, all these words, it's just foolish. I don't think anybody came into church this morning thinking, you know what? I hope Pastor tells me I'm talking too much today. I hope he has a message that really makes me feel bad about how I use my words. I mean, I really hope he lets me have it about my mouth today. Well, none of us come to church thinking that, but let's be honest for a moment. Do you have a tendency to talk way too much? Be honest. You have a tendency to talk way too much. Now listen, I know I'm not the only one in this room that has that problem. In fact, I think there's probably many of us who have a tendency to talk way too much. That's what Solomon wants to bring to our attention. He says, listen, you need to do this little self-examination. How do I know if my words are foolish? How do I know if I'm talking way too much? Look at these statements beginning at verse number 11. Statement number one, these are in your notes. Those who talk too much, they have a quick bite. Those who talk too much have a quick bite. Look at verse number 11. The Bible says, surely the serpent will bite without enchantment. Now, the picture here, and many of you may have seen this before. You've seen it maybe on television. Maybe you've seen it in person. I got to see this happen one time in person when I was over in India. I was standing 100 yards away, but I got to see it in person, all right? There's this basket, and this man takes a flute or an instrument and begins to play it, and all of a sudden, out of this basket comes this snake, typically a cobra. It's just dancing, waving back and forth to the music. The lid pops out, and as he fluctuates with the tune, the cobra fluctuates. Before you know it, the cobra's doing the whip and the nay-nay, man. He's just dancing right there out of the basket. And we look at that, and we're like, oh, how cute. That's awesome. How charming for this little innocent cobra to be dancing the way that it is in front of us. And truly, that's what it looks like on the outset. Charming, innocent, cute. But the principle that Solomon says is, hey, do you know what happens when you get too close to that little charming cobra? It'll bite you. It's not so cute when it bites you, and bites you in a quick way. And Solomon says, the same is true of the babbler. Look with me again at that verse number 11. Surely the serpent will bite without enchantment. And a babbler, that's one who has the gift of gab, one who talks way too much than they ought to talk. He says a babbler is no better. The person that is always talking, Solomon says, sooner or later is going to take a quick bite out of you. I mean, just think about it sensibly for a moment. Some of you know people, you're friends with people. It seems like every time you're together, they're taking bites out of everybody else. I can't believe she did that. I can't believe he does this. I can't believe they wore that. I mean, just bite, 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 bite. Don't you realize that there's going to come a day when you're not with those friends that they're going to take bites out of you too? Sure. That's the sensible thing. Because those who talk way too much have a tendency to bite when you least expect it. Sometimes it's not always behind your back. Sometimes everything could be hunky-dory, everything's great in this relationship, and all of a sudden, snap, 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 bite, bite, bite. You're like, where did this come from? It come from a foolish heart that doesn't know when to stop talking. They talk so much that they're very quick to bite after people's character, bite after their reputation, bite and tear them to pieces. The challenge that you and I have to be confronted with this morning is this: are you a quick biter? Are you? Well, Pastor, I haven't bit anybody since I was 10 years old. That's not what I'm talking about. You have a tendency to bite quickly at people? Let me tell you something, church. Be very careful with any friend in or outside of this place of congregation that has a tendency to bite quickly after others. They're talking way too much, and the Bible says they're a fool. They're a fool. The second statement, he says, those who talk too much, they say whatever's on their mind. Those who talk too much say whatever's on their mind. Look at verse number 12. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious. A wise man is going to speak gracious words, kind words, loving words. But the lips of a fool, now that's different. The lips of the fool, he swallows himself up. He just says whatever is on his mind. And some of us are very proud about that foolish characteristic that we possess. Pastor, I'm just transparent. Well, there's a difference between being transparent and speaking what's on your mind. Being transparent is honest, loving, gracious communication. Speaking what's on your mind is saying things you don't need to be saying in a way you shouldn't be saying it at a time you probably shouldn't do it. Well, that's just how I am. Well, you don't need to be who you are. Solomon says, here's a fool. They talk way too much because they love speaking whatever is on their mind. And can I help you? You know this. Whatever you say cannot be unsaid. Any more than you can unring a bell. Any more than you can unshoot a gun. Once it's said, it's said. Once it's out, it's gone. Proverbs illustrates it like an arrow being shot forth out of a bow. He says some of us speak words like that arrow. Once it's shot out, you can't say, oh, let me grab it. No. You shoot it, it's gone. And you have no control how it hits, who it hurts. It's gone, and the damage is going to be done. So stop speaking whatever's on your mind. It's foolish, Solomon says. Sometimes it's not warranted. Proverbs says in chapter 12 and verse 23, a prudent man, a wise man, he concealeth knowledge, but the heart of fools, they just proclaim it all. A wise man knows when he should speak and when he should not. A wise man knows that maybe that which is being talked about, he could add to the conversation, but maybe it's not best that I do. But a fool don't care. He's just going to say whatever is on his mind. I don't know about you, but I struggle with that. Sometimes I'm in situations where I long to say something when I know in my heart I should just be quiet. It's hard. You're sitting around the table with somebody and somebody's talking foolishness and you want to just going to go get a glass of water or something, you know. I want to say something so bad. I want to speak out so strongly. And Solomon says, you better be careful. That's foolish. Foolish for you to be a person who boasts in the fact that, hey, I just speak my mind. That's how I is. Well, it shouldn't who you be. Those who talk too much, they have a quick bite. They say whatever's on their mind. Number three, those who talk too much. Notice this. The more they say, the worse it gets. Come on. We know people like this, right? And the ones that we don't know like that, we're like, the more I say, the worse it gets. Look at verse number 13. the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness. Look right here. He says, hey, take this fool over here that talks too much. When he starts talking, you just know, just by the outset of the way he's talking, he's a fool. And you're thinking in your mind, you know what, it'd probably be best if he wouldn't say anything else. But he keeps talking. And he keeps talking. And he keeps talking. And the more he talks, the more he talks, the worse it gets. Because at the beginning, verse 13, at the beginning, the words of his mouth were just simply foolishness. But at the end of his talk, by the time he's done, it's sheer madness, he says. And this is crazy. This is insane. What he's saying, it contradicts himself. What he's saying is foolish. What he's saying doesn't even make sense. It's just the more he talks, the worse it gets. The more she talks, it's just sheer madness. And Solomon is saying sometimes it would be better off for us just to remain quiet and just stop talking. Proverbs 21:23, whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. You can control your mouth. If you can control your tongue, you'll have a whole lot of a better chance in this world having far less trouble. But isn't it interesting? When we look at the root causes of our trouble in our marriages, with our children, where we work, at church, whatever the case, it's usually because I said something I shouldn't say. I was talking way too much. Look at the next statement. Those who talk too much desire only to be heard. Those who talk too much, they just desire only to be heard. Look at verse 14. A fool also is full of words. Just talks so much. In fact, a man, verse 14, cannot tell what shall be or what shall be after him. Who can tell him? Hey, you can't even get a word in because he loves to hear himself talk so much. And how many of you know that there are some people that we recognize are simply enamored with the sound of their own voices? You can't speak to the subject. You can't jump into the conversation. You can't even ask questions because they're just full of words, full of words. They may not be addressed, but they speak anyway. There's nothing that needs to be said, but they say it anyway. I mean, they just love to hear themselves talk. And we ought to be careful about that. One pastor of many years ago helped me with this. He said, Jonathan, when you sit down with people, don't be so focused on your life. Ask them questions. Some of us wonder why we have a hard time keeping friends. The problem is not everybody else. The problem is you. You talk way too much. And your talking is just to let your voice be heard. It's all about you. Look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. And after that 60-minute lunch that you just had a friend, they haven't been able to even talk about their problems, their issues, or their casual conversations because you've done all the talking. There's some people like that that I've had a relationship. They're my friends. Hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee. We'll go grab a cup of coffee. I have some burdens I want to share. Maybe some prayer requests. Let's talk sports. Let's talk about my team. I'm tired of talking about your team. Let's just talk about something else. And they talk and they talk and they talk and they talk. 45 minutes has gone by. I say, can I ask you a question? How are you doing? You know, do you care how I'm doing? We just talk way too much because we desire only to be heard. And here's the problem with it. Proverbs 10:19 says this, in the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin. Do you know what that means? Look right here. The more you talk, the more you talk, the more prone you are to sin with your words. When there's a lot of talking, there's a lot of sinning. That's what he's saying. In the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Solomon says, foolish words. Those who talk too much have a quick bite. They say whatever's on their mind. The more they say, the worse it gets. They desire only to be heard. And then the last one, those who talk too much, they end up hurting themselves. Those who talk too much end up hurting themselves. Go down to verse number 20. Curse not the king. Better not say anything bad about the king, he says. Better not do it in your thought. No, not in thy thought. Curse not the rich in thy bedchamber. That means in the privacy of your home when you're with your closest friends. You better think twice before you say something bad about somebody. Why? Have you ever heard that little phrase? A little bird told me. You ever heard that? I'm fixing to show you where that came from. Look at the last part of verse 20. For a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. Little bird told me that you said this. I just said that to my friends. Well, your friends told me that you said that. Your family said that you thought that. That's why I love children's ministry. I know way more about some of you than you think I know. Because your kids tell me. That's why every Sunday morning I look at Kate and say, you better not say what I said last night. And there's no prayer request in children's church this morning. Pray for my daddy. He did this. No, don't do that. It's true. He's saying you better be careful thinking bad thoughts about people, because eventually those thoughts are going to come out. Well, I'm just saying them to my family. Well, you better be careful who you talk bad about anybody to anyone. Because sooner or later, that little bird that you thought was trustworthy, that you thought would never say anything, that you thought you could do in the privacy of your own friendships, is going to go. And they're going to tell everything you said about the matter. And then who does it hurt? Not the one you cursed. It hurts you. That's the thing about we who talk too much. Our words end up doing us more damage than they do anybody else. There's a proverb about that. My dad used to teach this to Jared and I when we were kids. He says, if you grab a dog by the ear, don't be surprised if that dog bites. The principle is there's just some things you don't need to say, some things you don't need to get involved in, or it's going to bite you. It's going to bite you. Because those who talk too much end up hurting themselves. Jesus said it like this, Matthew chapter 12, verse 36, every idle word, every one of them. Think about how many words you've said since you've been born. Every idle word you've ever thought, said. Notice what he says. You're going to give an account thereof in the day of judgment. You're going to have to face it. You're going to have to deal with it. He goes on to say in verse 37, for by thy words thou shalt be justified. Those good things, it's going to justify your behavior. But by the words also thou shalt be condemned. Solomon says, stop talking so much. Be sensible, be mature. Don't be guilty of foolish words. Listen more, talk less. Slow to speak, James said, quick to hear. My mama told me what your mama told you. You have two ears and one mouth for a reason. And that's to listen twice as much as you speak. Takes far less to ruin something than it does to create something. Some of us just need to stop talking. We're speaking foolishness. Here's the third one. Childish leaders, little sins, foolish words, childish leaders. Here's the statement and we'll be finished. Statement number three, accept responsibility and be a mature, sensible leader. Accept responsibility and be a mature, sensible leader. Look at verse number 15. A labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. He says, do you ever know what it's like to work for a terrible leader? If you have a terrible boss that doesn't do a very good job at leading you, he says, this is the verse for you. He said, you're going to know what I'm talking about. He says, some of us are such poor leaders that the people who work for us, the people who follow us, they get so frustrated because you don't even know where you're going or what you're doing. That's what he says in verse 15. All these people who are following this one leader, this one boss, this one employer, they're so frustrating. They're supposed to go into town to do a job, but he don't even know how to get to the job. He's just clueless. You would think that this is the most basic quality of leadership responsibilities. That if you're going to lead, know what you're doing, know how to get there. But there's a reason why this leader was frustrating his followers. And the answer is in verse number 16. Look at it. Woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child. Now, he's not saying that if your king is 13 years old, you're in trouble. That's not what he's saying. Matter of fact, there's biblical examples of great kings, very young age. King Josiah. 8 years old when he began to reign. And the Bible said he reigned gloriously. But that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about the age. He's talking about attitude. Woe to your land when your king is a child. When he acts like a kid. When he's immature. By the way, this is not just a national principle. Woe to you who work for childish employers. Woe to you who have a childish father. Woe to you who have a childish husband. Woe to you who have a childish pastor. Woe to you who have a childish president. He's talking about childish leaders. And here's the problem. Is that we have two types of leaders in the world. There's the mature, sensible, responsible leaders. And then there's immature, childish, reckless leaders. And let me tell you what we have a whole lot of. Immature, childish, reckless leaders. That instead of being moral leaders and role models, they are moral disasters. Immature, childish, irresponsible. And that's not just to be said of those who are kings. It's all of us. And he says, as a father, take responsibility. Be mature. As a husband, accept responsibility. Don't be childish. As a pastor, as a king, as an employer, accept your responsibilities and be who God made you to be. Stop being childish. Stop it. Because childish leaders, verse number 18, they're lazy. Notice what he says. By much slothfulness, the building decayeth. So here you have this leader who's responsible for a building, but he's lazy, and so it just all decays and falls apart. Because he's lazy, just childish. Doesn't accept his responsibilities. He says these childish leaders are time wasters. Look at the rest of the verse, number 18. And through idleness of the hands, the house droppeth through. It's a picture of a guy who likes to party all the time. Doesn't work with his hands. He's time waster. And while he's wasting time, his house just falls to the ground. Just falls to the ground. Because he's childish. He's not mature. He's not sensible. He's not accepting responsibility. Not only that, verse 19 says these childish leaders, they care only for their immediate pleasure. They care only for themselves. Look at verse 19. A feast is made for laughter. Wine maketh merry. But money answereth all things. He says this is their mentality. They eat to be happy. They drink to have fun. They spend money on themselves. Instead of doing the job that's been put before them to do in a sensible and mature manner, all they care about is themselves. It's contrary to the right kind of leader in verse 17. Where he says, blessed are thou, happy are you, O land, when thy king is a son of nobles and thy princes eat in due season for strength and not for drunkenness. He says, happy are ye as a nation when your leaders are mature and sensible and accept responsibility. Happy are you in your marriage when your husband is a mature, sensible leader. Happy are ye in your family when your father is a mature, sensible leader. Happy are ye in your church when your pastor is a mature, sensible leader. And on and on and on. He's trying to tell us to slow down and avoid childish behavior. Don't be the fool that only wants to lead when it's comfortable and convenient and on your own terms. It's childish. What's a travesty in the church world today is some of the most childish people are not the ones who are in kids' church this morning. They're ones who are in big church. immature, childish, irresponsible. What Solomon says, we need to grow up and accept responsibility and do what needs to be done with the roles we've been given to us by God to fulfill. Paul said it like this in 1 Corinthians 13:11. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. For some of us, we need to make a decision to put away childish things. You say, well, Pastor, what does all this have to do about slowing down? We've been talking for the last 9 chapters about slowing life down to a pace that's sustainable, pleasing to the Lord. It has everything to do with it. Because look right here. Some of us are going at such a fast pace in life that we're not slowing down long enough to recognize all the dead flies in our life. And they're stacking up. And they're causing us to make foolish decisions. Deal with those little sins. Slow down and deal with the dead flies that are floating around in your ointment. Slow down and pick up those hairs that are in your food today. It's destroying you. It's gross. It's giving you a bad reputation. So some of us are going so strong at such a fast pace that we're not slowing down long enough to consider our words. We're talking way too much. We're saying things when we shouldn't say it. We're saying it to people we shouldn't say it to. And it's killing our reputation. It's foolishness. Slow down. Slow down and deal with the dead flies. Slow down and think about what you're saying. Some of us are going so fast through life at such a high rate that we're not willing to slow down long enough to recognize that our leadership in the home, at work, at church, wherever, is not very mature and sensible. The things happening in my marriage and in my home and where I work as a result of my own childish behavior. You're lazy. You make bad choices. Your spirit is always angry, always looking for a fight, always looking for someone to correct instead of encourage. Childish, immature, unreasonable. Solomon says, for some of us, we need to slow down long enough to acknowledge the fact, I need to grow up. I need to grow up and be the leader God wants me to be. Think about it. Little sins, foolish words, childish leaders. Dead flies, subtle serpents, little birds. If we don't slow down and fix these things with God's grace and help, we're going to destroy life around it as we know it today.